Log Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome. This is Joe Cristiano and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. You may access Liberty Talk Radio through our website at libertytalkradio.com or through Blog Talk Radio, Liberty Talk Radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, April 15, 2007. It's about 8:31 Central Time in the good old United States. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Rio de Janeiro, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now, before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, please call area code 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments on the air. At any other time, you may call area code 903-551-2186 and leave a voice message. Of course, you can send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com, and we'll try to respond to your questions during our next broadcast. And this evening, we have with us this evening Amanda Teagarden. She is the co-founder of Operation Information, and her website is www.operationinformation.com. Amanda, it was good enough to come here this evening to our studio to discuss the Trans-Texas Corridor. Admittedly, I know very little about it, and I think we're going to get informed and taught about this very, very critical subject. Amanda, good evening.
Good evening, Joe. How are you tonight?
Very good, thank you. I want to thank you, give you a special thanks for taking a Sunday evening. I call this wind down time, and this is when I typically interview. So anyone who is willing to come on the air at this time, I have special gratitude and thanks for. Okay.
You're welcome,
Amanda. To start off, tell us something about yourself, and then follow that with how did you wind up doing what you're doing now?
Thank you. I've got into this by an unusual set of circumstances. I started out as an education researcher about 4 years ago. I've lived in Tulsa since 81 or 82. I'm married. We have two children, and typically have been a homemaker for the last about 17 years. But got into this because of what was happening in public education. Learned how to do research, did not own a computer. Now I own a computer, actually two computers, printers, fax, etc. And started doing more research and realized how woefully ignorant I was of the Constitution and what exactly our government is made up of, and have developed contacts across the United States, a network, if you want to call it that, of people who are like-minded to do research into what's happening in the United States, not only with education, but that kind of morphed into other topics, including the Trans-Texas Corridor, which is south of us, as you know, because this is Oklahoma. We have tremendous rivalry between Oklahoma and Texas, but right now we need to be praying for Texas and actively aware of what's happening in Texas, because Texas is going to go through radical changes here with the Trans-Texas Corridor if this cannot be stopped.
I've got to ask you, first, let me ask you one question. How did you make this transition from what you were doing, including with your research, to the Trans-Texas Corridor? You live in Oklahoma.
I live in Oklahoma. when you start really researching education, you do realize that it is not a local issue. It is controlled at the federal level. There are federal curriculums. In 2003, our president rejoined UNESCO When you start studying UNESCO and United Nations activities, you can't help but do a lot of research that touches on a lot of other areas, every facet of our life. And out of that research, again, came the opportunity through these networks to find out information. So people start sending you things. Find out about what happens in Texas education. You develop links. Then you start hearing little bits and pieces about a corridor that's coming that would be bringing traffic in from Mexico through the state of Texas. Well, we're right north of that. That's going to come through Oklahoma, head up through Kansas and Missouri, and head on up to Canada. Now, how is that going to be possible? And out of that, having learned how to research through educational research, it was pretty easy to start developing information sites.
What made you pick on that particular subject? I'm sure during your research, there were a plethora of subjects or areas that were areas of frustration and almost maybe even anger.
Why
this one? Why did you hone in on this one in particular?
Because the issue of globalization was what was predominantly hit us in the face, was the issue of globalization. Our children are being taught to be global citizens, not just U.S. citizens. Kids who are in kindergarten and first grade are being taught about foreign countries before they even know their own address and the configuration of the state of Oklahoma, their own form of government. They're learning about other governments and the equality of all of these governments, that their government or their constitution is any greater or better than any other one. What is driving this sense of globalization, where students would be taught to be global citizens? What happened to be U.S. citizens? What happened to the founding fathers? What happened to our Constitution, the Declaration of Independence? Paul Revere, the things that I learned about when I was younger, I'm 51, you probably learned about them too when you were younger. So the issue was globalization and how is this going to take place? How is this going to happen? That's how that got how it got linked to the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Well, the concept of the Trans-Texas Corridor sounds interesting. It sounds like it's a forward step. We're going to get a new highway, move more goods and services, more efficiency. What's so bad about it?
How it's being sold to the public. And of course, if you stop to think about Oklahoma roads, our roads are in terrible condition.
Correct.
Why aren't they being fixed? The state of Texas has a problem with congestion. If you've been down there, you understand there's a lot of cars and a lot of trucks on that highway. It's a system of highways. How could this happen? And the call from the federal government, we just don't have the money. Now there are more people, more cars, more tax dollars being accumulated all the time. Why don't we have money to fix the roads? Well, the issue is that there's necessary circumstances that have to be there. Congestion, for one, air quality, quality of life. These are all the buzzwords, if you want to call them that, to say that, oh, this justifies the building of a massive corridor system. And I want to clarify something with you, Joe. When we're talking about the Trans-Texas Corridor, we are not talking about one highway. It is a system of highways, interconnecting highways. It's 4,000 miles of interconnecting highways that crisscross the state of Texas. Now, when we think of the state of Texas, we're thinking of a huge state, lots of land.
Let me ask you, you're saying 4,000 miles. Is that 4,000 miles within the United States, or 4,000 miles of highway within the state of Texas?
4,000 miles of interconnected highway in the state of Texas.
Will this all be new highway or connecting to old existing highways?
That's a good question. It does both. Some of these are existing highways that will have to be expanded or connected to other highways. The I-35 corridor, or as it's called, the Trans-Texas Corridor, TTC-35, right. And the other major one is the TTC-69, which is a new highway that will be developed that goes off onto the east side of Texas. Maybe a description of what the Trans-Texas Corridor is might help. Would that help?
Yes,
please. What the heck is this? The Trans-Texas Corridor, the TTC-35, is a proposed highway system that is, by the artist rendition and the plans, the engineering plans, is 1,200 feet wide. Now, this is not a typical width of a highway. 1,200.
You said 1,200 feet wide.
1,200 feet wide. I think there's some legislation there that might reduce it to 800
feet. That's almost a quarter mile.
That's a quarter of a mile. The way it is planned is it's three lanes, facing north for cars, 3 lanes going south for cars, 2 truck lanes going north, 2 truck lanes going south. You have rail and passenger rail, freight rail and passenger rail. Then on either side of the highway, you're going to have your utilities. So what are utilities? You've got water, you have fiber optic cables, you have your power, and you have very few access and egress. You can't access it or cross this corridor. It's so massive. So you're going to have to, if you happen to have a store on one side of the Trans-Texas Corridor, as is proposed, you're going to have to drive miles out of your way to get a crossover, to get to a crossover, because those aren't in the plans, to get to across the road. This is, how does the chicken cross the road? How are the people going to cross the road?
Well, in other words, this is not going to be an elevated highway. This is going to be just a terrestrial library right on the ground, right?
It's being built in segments, so some parts of it may be elevated, but to be 1,200 feet wide, it will have to be at ground level.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Right, for the utility. So how you'd have to cross it maybe is the crossing could be underground, or the crossing would be an overpass. So 1,200 feet wide, 10 lanes of traffic, dedicated truck lines. It's going to be a toll road, huge, and it will either parallel I-35 as it exists today or run on I-35 with segments of I-35 being expanded to accept some of this traffic. There is massive amounts of resistance to this in the state of Texas, because for each mile of this highway, it will gobble up 146 acres of land. That's 146 acres of land for each mile of this highway. Now, Texas has a lot of farmers and ranchers, and this corridor makes no distinguish between whether it's a filling station, a business, someone's home, your ranch, your historic home that's been in your family for 125 years. If it happens to be in the way of this corridor, as they see the direction needs to go, they will use the condemnation process and the issue of eminent domain to take the property.
At what stage are we at with this Trans-Texas Corridor?
The Trans-Texas Corridor final plan was approved by the government of Texas in 2002. It was Rick Perry, Governor Rick Perry's plan, and it was finalized in 2002, so it's been on the books. The legislature agreed to it, not fully understanding, as they claim now, not fully understanding the breadth and depth of this corridor and what it would actually mean. Texas does have a congestion problem. You know, there's an issue with the long lines of trucks.
Well, I might interrupt you, but I lived in Houston, and I saw the Trans-Texas Corridor website, you know, the government website, I guess, and they had pictures of the roads that I traveled on, you know, yes, around Houston, and they are. They're constantly congested 24 hours a day.
But I
didn't see how a Trans-Texas Corridor was going to relieve that congestion unless it was going to take some of the trucks that were on that road, but mostly they're not trucks, they're just cars, commuting. And a Trans-Texas Corridor, I don't know how that would relieve the inner city commute. I mean, that's where the bottleneck is, because the highways can handle the cars. It's when they hit Houston, hit the town, there's no place to disperse the cars fast enough to get them off the highway, and it backs up.
Yes.
And they have the loop, and then they have the belt. And Dallas is the same way.
What they are suggesting, I haven't looked at Houston because I don't think I-35. Does I-35 go through Houston? This is going up through.
No, let's see. When I go, yes, I go to take I-35. You know what? I don't know. I last time I was down there was about 2 years ago. I took I-35 down to Dallas, and I think I-35 goes down to Houston.
I think I-35 goes down to Laredo.
Oh, okay.
It meets in Laredo. Anyway, so my interest in this was peaked last July. My husband and I and a friend drove down to Texas. We went to Sherman, Texas.
Okay.
We got on some websites and found out. By the way, if your listeners are interested in this website or in this topic of the Trans-Texas Corridor, they can go to keeptexasmoving.org. That's the state of Texas.
That's the
website.
One I was on. That's correct, yes.
That's where you were. And that gives you a pretty good overview. Now, that's all the positive.
That's correct.
That's
it was very positive.
Very positive. So it's www.keeptexasmoving.org, as you saw. They can click on the little video, and you can
That's
see.
That's correct. I viewed the video.
I think it's 8 or 11 minutes long. You can watch it. It's a pretty picture. of what this will do and how life will be better with the Trans-Texas Corridor. Now, you and I both know from geography that south of Texas is Mexico and north of Texas is Oklahoma.
Right.
So I don't think that this thing's going to stop at the Red River. So 1,200-foot wide Trans-Texas Corridor and a system of corridors, could that stop? And so my question was, are those cars going to levitate over the state of Oklahoma? Because I haven't heard any plans in the state of Oklahoma for how we're going to accommodate all this extra traffic.
That's an interesting point, because if they're going, and apparently this is a project that's ongoing for the next 50 years, according
correct.
To the, right?
That's correct.
And which surprised me. Usually they say 5 years or 20 years is on the outside. This is 50 years. And yet, not anything was said about the states that adjoin Texas that would be affected by this. Obviously, the highway is not going to stop at the Oklahoma, at the Red River, and cars are going to fall off the end of the earth. They have to go somewhere.
Yes,
so it cannot be a mutually exclusive project, can it?
No,
it's
got to
be a nationwide project.
Well, you brought up some good points. And when you were watching the video, did you see in all that propaganda, as I'll call it, propaganda, infomercial, did you see anything that was an explanation of where the traffic was coming from and why they suddenly had an increase in traffic?
No, you know, that was interesting, because when I was watching that, I know the areas where when I lived down there, you know, the high traffic areas and where people were, the influx of people were moving in, and yet that wasn't by the Trans-Texas Corridor. As you say, I-35 doesn't go through Texas. But it never said where it was coming from or where it was going to.
Exactly.
It never said, just said, we need more highways, better highways. We need to move trucking. We need to move commerce more effectively and more efficiently, and this solves our problem. That's
it
all
did.
Basically it said.
It did, because it said that the population of Texas had increased.
Right.
Now I'm going to tell you, and you probably have realized this, that from the 2000 census, the population of the United States, people's families are not getting any larger.
That's correct.
We are not replacing ourselves at a rate that would support the claim that population is increasing. So I thought it was very interesting that they entirely avoided the topic of illegal immigration and the influx of citizens from other countries landing in the state of Texas. They completely ignored it and didn't bring that up. But that is where the population increase is coming from.
Right.
That's where the truck traffic is coming from. It's coming from Mexico.
Right. Which I thought was a little disingenuous is when they compared the gasoline consumption to 1970. And they mentioned that the cars today are more fuel efficient, thus their state tax dollars for transportation per car was being reduced. But a few frames before that, they mentioned in their justification for the highway the larger number of cars on the highway. So what they did is they took from their vantage point, you know, the consumption per car was down, but they didn't mention the number of cars, you know, quadrupled or whatever. So really, state revenues were in fact up, but maybe the consumption per the tax revenue per car was down. And I thought that was misleading and disingenuous, because they talked with forked tongue within 5 minutes in that video, and that bothered me.
Well, you probably caught something that most individuals wouldn't catch. How can you have more cars and more cars using gas and have less fuel tax income?
Oh, yeah, and they also mentioned that people were driving more. And so all they took was the fuel efficiency of the car, extrapolated that out, and they say, obviously, if this continues, we won't have enough revenue. We don't have enough revenue now. And I said, boy, that was a quick sleight of hand. I thought that was really neat.
Well, the argument that I've been hearing on that is that the fuel tax has not been increased for 10 years or some, since 1993 or 1994. The fuel tax has not increased. Percentage is something 18.5 cents or some, don't quote me on that, but it's that has stayed stagnant all the time. And as you said, they say cars are more fuel efficient, so they're using less fuel. On the other hand, there are more cars, but they're looking ahead to see if we go to more fuel efficient or hybrid cars, that the sales tax collection on gasoline tax could go down. they don't want to lose the federal funding, as they say, because that money goes for road maintenance and road improvements.
But what they didn't say also, or they said in the beginning of the video, but they didn't repeat when they talked about their own justification for the fuel tax, they didn't mention the fact that, repeat themselves and say, but people are driving more.
And we have more drivers.
Right, and we have more drivers.
And
they didn't say that. Right.
There are more drivers.
They wanted the best of both worlds on that one. And I, surprisingly, I'm not that smart. I caught that one, and that one got me angry.
I have found you're not supposed to ask questions. You're just supposed to accept it as true. But
that's the American way, by the way.
Actually, the American way is for us to question our government.
I know.
And
right,
to
exactly.
dig into what they're doing. All right.
Let me, where's the money going to come from for this thing? This thing is just gargantuan is it doesn't say it. It's got to be absolutely
prohibitive, cost prohibitive.
Absolutely.
The estimated cost without the acquisition of property, you see, they're going to have to use condemnation and eminent domain to take the properties in order to build something this large. What they have not said is what the final cost is. But with the estimated final cost for the TTC 35 as it's planned is $186 billion. That's billions with a B. $186 billion. The reason it's going to take 50 years, as you already mentioned, it's a large project. And I had an article that I read that the Trans-Texas Corridor is not your father's highway. This is not like anything else that we've seen. The tolls on it, segments of it, there's a certain segment of this highway from Austin to, or from San Antonio to Austin, that has been sold or leased out to Cintra Zachary. Now, Cintra is a Spanish-Australian consortium. They build and engineer and design highways, and they are the primary shareholder of the Cintra Zachary partnership. Zachary is a firm in Austin that does construction, highway construction. So they partner together. So you have a foreign interest that is leasing. They have a comprehensive development agreement with the state of Texas. It was a private, and in fact, some people are saying it was a secret agreement, development agreement called a CDA, Comprehensive Development Agreement, that the state of Texas made with the Spanish firm, Spanish-Australian firm, Cintra Zachary, which is a firm, if you get on Cintra, which is C-I-N-T-R-A, Cintra Zachary, and just do a Google search on that, you'll find that they have, they're an international highway consortium, and they have highways that they manage and collect the tolls on internationally. And when this was happening in Texas, the same kind of allowing of the U.S. infrastructure to be sold to a foreign interest was happening in other cities in the United States. What a coincidence. Recently, the governor of, I think it's New Jersey, no, Indiana, sold the Indiana Toll Road to a foreign interest. The Chicago Skyway is being managed and controlled by a foreign country.
I guess we're incapable of doing that ourselves.
Well, yes, apparently we are. It's the state of Texas, for heaven's sakes, can't do that. But they're selling this to the public. You've already touched on it. The Republican leadership there would say, we don't want to have a tax increase on the gases, so this solves that problem. We're not going to raise taxes. We'll make it a toll road, and we will allow a foreign country to manage and collect the tolls on this highway. Now, can you imagine that? This is the United States of America. We can't manage and build and design our own toll road, and we're selling off the infrastructure of the United States to make money, and the justification is we will not raise taxes for the U.S. citizens.
Okay. Now, I understand, I read somewhere that most of the congressmen in Texas, the state congressmen, voted for this.
Yes, that was.
Overwhelmingly voted for this. Now, where was the dissenting votes? I mean, what are we missing here?
What I have, I don't know exactly what happened in Texas, but looking through this, that this particular transportation bill was over 300 pages long. Compared to some federal bills, that's kind of short, but 300 page long on very busy legislators. Some of them now are saying, I didn't read all of it. I didn't see what was in the bill.
Is it like the Patriot Act? I mean, no one has ever read the Patriot Act. I mean, it's not an unreadable document because it's so long. It references other documents, and you'll read forever. You'll never finish reading this stupid thing.
It probably references other public law that you
have
to
research. Yeah, right, and it's unreadable. And they voted on it, and there's not one person in U.S. Congress who has the faintest idea what it says.
Well, it would probably be very similar to NAFTA, the North America Free Trade Agreement, which is not a treaty but an agreement, and that was over 900 pages long, and they didn't read it. They did not read it. And part of what we're looking at here with this infrastructure from Texas, which, by the way, does bring in the, it links to the highways in Mexico. That's what we are doing.
Okay, my next question to you will be this. Okay, all right. Well, how is it going to be financed? Oh, it's going to be financed via the toll road.
Via the tolls. Now, they have what you talked about, congestion. There are all kinds of ideas out there. The state of Texas cannot give the citizens of Texas the final price on what those tolls will be. Now, the tolls will be market-driven, which means that could be any price that is decided. Now, I'm going to tell you something. As far as when we sell off the infrastructure of the United States and it becomes an investment for some consortium, that now is like a stock option. And do the stockholders want? They want some return on their stock.
Return on investment, absolutely.
Return on investment.
Right. We don't care about anything. Show me the money.
So who is the loyalty to the citizens of the United States or the citizens of Texas who are going to be driving on that highway, or is it to the stockholders?
No, it has got to be the stockholders.
Anybody
who says anything else, because they're just naive, and I'm sorry if I'm insulting any of my listeners out there, but listen, ladies and gentlemen, please follow the money. You'll find every war, you'll find the justification for every war if you'll follow the money. But go ahead, we won't get into that. But absolutely
correct.
Which
is absolutely true.
Right.
They're not doing this altruistically. This is a financial deal, and this consortium had to look at this. It's backed by a large bank, Bank of Spain, and which is partnered with one in Australia. All of a sudden, I had to realize, okay, I'm learning things about a bank in Australia, a bank in Spain. This is a Texas corridor, and I just want to know what's going to happen to Oklahoma.
So
and
these are going to be the major
all over the place.
These are going to be the major investors.
Yes. For this segment, it's a segmented highway.
Right.
Segments meaning a little bit here and a little bit up north and a little bit around Dallas. You're gonna have little pieces.
Why don't we
connect.
Do what Mexico does to us? Expropriate it right after they build it and say, sorry, you've lost your investment. I know, I'm only teasing, but that's what most countries have done to us when we've built
them. I don't think we should actually adopt any of the things that Mexico does.
I know, I agree.
Great food, but I don't think we should follow their example on any...
Let's go with the assumption that it's being built because someone's going to make some big bucks, and it ain't going to be us.
It's an investment
for somebody, and there's a return on investment on this thing.
Exactly.
And we're going to sell our rights, our liberty, and our freedom. But that's okay, because somebody else will make a hell of a lot of money on the deal. Right?
Well, you're not thinking of the children here, because, you know, this is just going to be
we're going to sell
children.
My kids. We're selling the kids down the river, too. Okay?
We are.
All right. Now.
Now, on this comprehensive development agreement with Cintra Zachary, when you talk about our children, you and I will both be dead by the time this deal's over with, because
right.
it is 50 years long.
Right.
It is a 50-year lease.
I intend to live forever, Amanda. I want you to know that. This
radio
station couldn't
do
without me.
Your body's going to die unless you've made...
I've made prearrangements.
Yes. But this is, that's the other thing about these infrastructures that are being sold to these foreign consortiums or these investments is that they are long term. They're longer than the lifespan of the people who made the initial arrangement. So this one in Texas is 50 years. The one in Indiana, I believe, is 99 years. There's one out there that's 75 years. The Chicago Skyway, I think, is a 99-year lease.
Now, are any other states... in the process of doing a Texas corridor segment in their states now? I mean, are they doing it concurrently, or we're just going to wait till Texas to finish, and then Oklahoma goes, and then Kansas, and then Iowa? Well, how does that work? Are other states involved in this right now?
From what I've seen, there are other corridor coalitions, what I'm going to call them corridors. By the way, a few years ago, we called all these highways.
Right.
And this new term started showing up in the U.S. language here. These are corridors. Well, a corridor is a pathway, and it can
That's
be a highway,
right.
It can be a green corridor, it can be a flight corridor, it could be
Correct.
A multimodal corridor, so multiple ways of transportation. So a new word was introduced to the American public, and we hardly paid any attention. Well, these corridors are being built all over the United States, but nothing on the scale of what's happening in the state of Texas. Texas is considered a gateway from Mexico. And it is a series of corridors that will have to to bisect the state of Texas. Now, I'm going to tell you that typically we have rivalry with the state of Texas, but we need to be helping our friends in the state of Texas, because if Texas falls and this massive corridor system is allowed to be built, we are bringing in the traffic. My gut feeling on this is that we are building incrementally the free trade area of the Americas, because the traffic, why build such a massive highway system to bring in goods from Mexico, which is an impoverished country in many respects? It must be linking down south of Mexico through Guatemala, through Central America, all the way down. And I know that we are, piece by piece, the free trade area of the Americas was stalled. We didn't pass it. We did pass CAFTA, but we didn't pass the free trade area of the Americas. And so incrementally, we are putting it together. The Trans-Texas Corridor is just, as I said before, that's the gateway. It does bring in traffic from the state of from the country of Mexico. NAFTA did allow for reduction in trade barriers between the three countries who are partners with this. So it's reduction in trade barriers between the United States and Canada, which most people aren't focusing on as much, but it is reducing the trade barriers from the United States and Mexico. And what's a barrier would be the southern border. In all of its, anything that you can think of would be a barrier, the southern border. That's why the border is not being closed between the United States and Mexico. That the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which maybe we can talk about a little bit, is promoting the free movement of goods and people. Yeah. Free movement of goods and people.
Amanda, we received a call. Someone had called into our alternate phone number and said that our phone is not working, and yet it seems everything seems to be working. But anyway, our secretary took the call. All right. And it says, this is a question from caller. If I don't, you don't mind me interrupting, just it says, with all the information available about the subject, who do you see as ultimately responsible or behind it, aside from the country leaders, Bush, etc.? Is it corporations or their other globalists who have an interest? Who?
I think that's an excellent question. And again, you're asking a mom who's done some research. I had to learn all kinds of things. You mentioned before, follow the money. We've touched on this a little bit. The governor of Texas, who is a Republican, I happen to be a Republican, is a Republican who, through partnerships with what I would call multinational corporations, those are the ones who are going to benefit from an increased flow of goods, freight goods, for instance, between Mexico and the United States, a free flow of goods between the United States and Canada. Who is going to benefit would be the large multinational corporations.
Okay.
There are several who have partnered with the federal government. A long time ago, we would have called businesses who partnered with the federal government. There's a term for that that you don't hear in the U.S. lexicon very often. But Mussolini was very fond of building businesses between the United, from between the government and businesses. And if you weren't one of those select businesses who had partnered with the government, you were not in business.
Right.
You couldn't survive. Well, that's what's happening here. We have large multinational corporations such as Ford, UPS, Merck. You've heard of Merck recently in the news. FedEx. There are several. Oh, Walmart is one. Probably about 20 of them have partnered with the U.S. government in what is called the North American Competitiveness Council. Now, these organizations were already partnered with the government in a lot of ways. I would suggest Swift Manufacturing, people who are in the building business, have also made deals. When Vicente Fox became president of Mexico, it was right around the same time President Bush was elected president of the United States, and up in Canada, Paul Martin was elected about the same time. So we had a unique convergence at the same time. Year 2000, we had three new leaders. Those three leaders have grown partnerships between them. There is the thought behind all of this that we are building what's called the North American Union, the complete removal of any barriers between the three countries. And yet the leaders are saying we're going to respect the sovereignty of each of the three countries, but we're going to reduce the barriers to trade. Well, out of all of this, it's like, how are we doing this? What's the mechanism? What's the framework? How is this going to be happening? It is my opinion that it is the policy of our current administration and the one prior, and the one prior to that, to incrementally do away with the borders between the three countries and build what is called a North American Union without it going through the oversight by Congress, without it going to a vote of the people of the United States. In order for this to happen, you have to have a transportation system. Transportation, I actually happen to have gone to a conference in Kansas City last December 1st. I was in there. The conference subject was Building the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. The subject was transportation. How to integrate.
Right. Without transportation, right.
One of the keynote speakers there said, transportation is key to making this happen. You cannot do it without transportation. They're not going to walk. You have to have.
But why do this? Why are they doing this, I guess, is the question. There's got to be, I mean, they're not doing it because I think it's a good idea. Let's put that aside for a second, okay?
How could that be a good idea? How could that be healthy?
Just look around
the neighborhood here. Let's tear down the walls between your house and the neighbor's house, yeah. and the guy across the street, and we'll all live
good
communally. It wouldn't work here. You are not the same people and have the same belief systems as your neighbors.
Right.
You're not their family. Right. We do not have the same governments. Canada is a unique government to itself. The United States is a representative republic. We are not a democracy. We're a republic.
Right.
And the Mexico has who knows what is mostly socialist.
Well, Mexico is a third world country, a fourth world country at this point, from the people point of view.
Well, we have to be politically correct. They're a developing country.
Yeah,
they're developing
in the wrong way.
Well, they're developing with the help of the United States dollars.
Right.
And we are providing workforce training workforce training by allowing the illegal aliens to come across the border and have companies that are ready to hire them. Now, that's called workforce development.
Yeah.
That came out of that agreement years ago, I think it was 2001, before 9/11, between Vicente Fox and President Bush. He made an agreement. It was called Partnership for Prosperity.
Right.
And they made an agreement between multinational corporations, United States corporations, agreed to work with the government of Mexico to train their workforce.
Well, are you saying then it's the multinational corporations that are ones that are really behind this?
What I believe is that in all of this study that there are large money interests that have more of a say in how our government is run than the average person is aware of.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Now, why didn't we didn't hear much dissension from the Texas Congress? And you just still don't hear. I mean, we hear a lot about, you know, Anna Nicole Smith on the news, you know, and what's
Isn't
happening with her. I mean, she's been gone for some time, and you still hear on the news every day. But this should be a subject that be on national news, and we should be updated every day as to what people have. They're not interviewing anyone, that's for sure.
In Texas, but it's all alternative media. This is an alternative media. There are alternative medias. I have found that it was amazing. When we were looking into education, we thought for sure that when we told parents what was happening in the public school systems, that number one, they would yank their children out, or number two, they would be down at the school board demanding changes. Neither one of those things happened. They're very comfortable, they get their news from the right source, or they say, I like those people. This is what's happening here. People get their news from CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN.
Excuse me, I think we have a caller. You're on the air. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Yes, this is Randy, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes, Randy. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, I have a man to answer a couple of questions. Might be of interest to the people listening. Are there going to be any non-compete agreements to force us to drive on the toll roads? And will this highway affect the port workers such as in California and across the country?
Can you repeat the question, please, and speak a little slower and a little bit louder, please?
Yes. Are there going to be any non-compete agreements that will force us to drive on the toll roads? And will this highway affect the port workers, say, in California, with the goods coming through Mexico as planned?
Okay. Will there be any non-compete agreements? And I'm not certain if I understand what you mean by a non-compete agreement. Randy, can you?
Yes, I understand. What you do?
Okay, please do. All right, then.
He's probably asking, are there non-compete clauses in these agreements that, yes. For instance, when Texas was putting out the bids on the Trans-Texas Corridors, other consortium or other design bidding and engineering firms bid on the Trans-Texas Corridor. But the packages are designed so that only a very few people can actually do the job as described. That narrows the field, so it really does limit the competition, even though they say, we're putting this out for bid. But the project is so huge that it really is a false sense of actually sending it out for bid. It's a predetermined open bidding process. So then this consortium gets it. In the contract, or the comprehensive development agreement, in this instance, there's a clause in there that says non-compete. Well, what does non-compete mean? It means that during the time of the toll road, the collection of the tolls, and the building of this highway, and the actual operation of the highway, the state cannot build or improve other infrastructures that could compete with the toll road.
Ah, okay.
That's what non-compete is.
All right.
That's non-compete.
Randy, does that answer your first part of your question?
Yes, sir, it sure does. I just wonder, are you people gonna put up with that? Seems to me like there's something not kosher with forcing us to drive on toll roads.
Oh, no, I agree with you. You had a question about the but the ports in California. What was that again?
Yeah, I was wondering how this highway will affect such as our port workers out in California. It seems like we'll be diverting a lot of traffic or good shipments from through Mexico rather than through our American ports.
Okay, I have you now. Okay. He's asking, how would this affect the traffic coming in from California, since we'll have this new superhighway coming through from Mexico? Will this be diverting goods that normally come through California, will they be diverted through Mexico?
They can be. The state of California has their deep water ports all along the coast. Those are managed by a Chinese firm, which Hutchinson Whampoa traditionally manages that. But those are longshoremen working out there, U.S. citizens.
Right.
I'm assuming U.S. citizens working there. The Trans-Texas Corridor is opening up gateways that would be... The goods are delivered to, for instance, on the western side of Mexico, we've got the port of Manzanilla and Lazarus Cardenas on the western side of Mexico. That's a deep water port that accepts goods from China that would come in there off the ships. It's offloaded onto trucks or trains. We now have infrastructure that is in place that would bring those up through the state of Mexico or the country of Mexico, cross the border of Laredo, not stop, and go to an inland port in Kansas City before it was ever inspected. We already have that in place through a Kansas City Smart Port has developed a tracking system and partnerships with Mexico, Canada, the United States for tracking of goods, but the goods are coming in from China. They can bypass the expensive longshoremen on the West Coast and come in through the cheaper port of Mexico.
Right.
Now, on the opposite side, also, you happen to know, probably have found this out, that the Panama Canal is being widened and deepened, so you can have two largely loaded or heavily loaded ships can pass each other at the same time. So you can't just have one going one way. You can have two ships going in opposite directions, passing each other, loaded down with goods. So let's say it's coming in from the Florida side, can pass through, or the Atlantic side, pass through and come in on a port on the other side of Mexico, on the eastern side of Mexico. Again, is offloaded onto trains, offloaded onto trucks, and here we come up north again through this corridor system. Now, corridors includes rails, trains, inland barges, etc. Those come up through the country of Mexico into the state of Texas, and then they're dispersed north, west, east, across the United States through the gateway of Texas.
Okay.
That's happening. So,
Randy,
yes.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. It sure does. I sure appreciate it.
Okay.
She really knows what's happening.
She sure does. Randy, thank you for listening to Liberty Talk Radio. We appreciate it, and we'll hang up now, okay? Thank you, sir. What's going to happen in Mexico? What are they doing? Are they building any superhighway?
Well, you brought up a good point.
I mean, if we're going to do it, I want to see what. And if one is being built down there, are we paying for it?
Well, there's a couple of things that have been in the works here, which I didn't know when I was younger, was the NAFTA allows for infrastructure development in the country of Mexico. That's part of the NAFTA agreement. Now, infrastructure could be...
No, say that again. I think I misheard you.
NAFTA?
Yes, say it again.
Allows for the development of infrastructure in the country of Mexico.
Well, when you say that, allows for the development of the infrastructure in Mexico, by whom? With whose money?
Well, who has the deepest pockets? Who would be daddy?
You mean we are sort of obligated in a way to assist Mexico in its infrastructure to facilitate this melding of the countries?
And that's not the only way. It's not through NAFTA. We have a huge omnibus transportation bill, which I just found out about. This part of the transportation bill, safety laws, public law 109-59, public law 109-59, finalized in 2005. In that bill allows for border states, and we're talking border states, we have southern border and northern border states, to designate part of their transportation dollars to Mexico or Canada for developing their infrastructure. I think it's up to 100 miles out. Now, that's who's helping is the United States. Now, I don't know about you, Joe, but I myself and my husband did not pay taxes anticipating that they were going to build infrastructure in a foreign country.
Absolutely. Well, we do that all the time. Excuse me, I want to clarify one thing. Our phone number is 646-652-4620. I just realized that the other person who was trying to call us was calling 656-642, the reverse. So that's why our phones are alive and they're kicking. We just received a call. Everything's working fine. It's 646-652-4620. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Our guest, Amanda T. Garden, and we're talking about the Trans-Texas Corridor. This is Joe Cristiano, your host, and now we'll return to our program. Now, we have about 10 minutes left. Boy, this went fast. All right.
It does.
Knowing that we have 10 minutes left, and I have just a million questions, and this will bring us till midnight, I'm sure. I want to give you the last 10 minutes to summarize why we should be concerned. We talked a lot about that. It almost seems surreal, I'll be honest with you. Like, oh, yeah, that's your imagination taking, you know, guiding you. And, you know, this really can't happen. You know, this is all smoke and mirrors. It almost sounds that way. It sounds like you're an alarmist, conspiratist, and, you know, you're off on a tangent somewhere. But I know you're not. I mean, this is happening, you know. So we'll dispense of all that. We'll tell our listeners to dispense of all that as well. Why don't you give us a little wrap-up for our listeners so they'll know where we are, what your main concerns are, and then what we should be doing.
That's hard to wrap up what you think is happening to the United States in 10 minutes, but I'll give you an overview.
That's all right.
What we're talking about here, we live in the state of Oklahoma, which is in the country of the United States. We are a sovereign state, or we should be a sovereign state in a sovereign country. Okay, now just hold on to that fact. Below us in the state of Texas, they are working on building or constructing a massive transportation system called the Trans-Texas Corridor. Now, it's singular, but it's a series of corridors. North of us in Kansas City, Missouri, is called the Kansas City Smart Port, and Kansas City is marketing itself as an international transportation hub. Now, that's international because they are hugely asseted in warehousing. They have highway systems that crisscross the United States that bisect right in Kansas City. They have an inland port system. They are marketing themselves as an inland port. They are in the works of producing a Mexican customs clearance facility under Mexican leadership in the city of Kansas City. Now that is happening. NAFTA is coming to maturity here. It has a 15-year lifespan on it where we had 15 years to develop, to reduce barriers to trade between the three countries. We have what is called the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, which is the government's policy, according to Carlos Gutierrez, who is the Commerce Secretary for the United States, that the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America is the federal government's current policy. That means that is what we are doing. So we have the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which is linking and reducing barriers between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. We have these corridors that are being built across the United States, the large one north to south with the Trans-Texas Corridor or the NASCO Superhighway, NASCO, North America's Super Corridor Coalition. Typically, we would not be paying any attention to highways except that, or transportation, in that we need roads improved. In Oklahoma, we have potholes, and we don't have good-looking roads here. We need that, which we do. And we have people who need to build the roads. We have an unchecked immigration problem in the United States. Now, why are all of these things happening? What could be the motivation? What is happening? If someone said, we are going to create and build a North American Union, we would be involved in exactly these same activities. We wouldn't close the borders between the countries. We would make it mandatory to have a real ID that is good in all three countries, which is legislation that's trying to be stopped right now.
Right.
We would have infrastructure development funds going to Mexico to help bring them up to speed, which is what we're doing. We would have a problem with gay marriages being promoted in the northeastern states, because that's part of what the social structure is of Canada. In the Security and Prosperity Partnership, Canada was put in charge of border facilitations, making it easier to cross the borders, north and south. The United States was put in charge of regulatory convergence. Why would you do that? Converging the regulations of three countries. And then Mexico was put in charge of the topic of energy integration. Now, why would you do all of those things? Why? It is not because to be globally competitive. It is to create a larger unit. Now, if you want to talk about, it's much easier to deal with the European Union as a single entity rather than 25 different countries. And having to deal with 25 different heads of state, you'll only have one. Now, that's much easier. If we only have one head of state for the North American Union, or a triumvirate, or equal partners between them, that's much easier to negotiate. Now, I don't know what the grand plan is, but I do know that the state of Oklahoma is sandwiched between Kansas City, Missouri, and the state of Texas.
Right.
And what's happening in Texas will affect the state of Oklahoma, and we need to be on the alert, watching for bills in the House and in the Senate that could be facilitating what's happening in Texas. The state of Texas regrets agreeing to the bill that they agreed to that's going to build that Trans-Texas Corridor, and those people down there are fighting for their property and for their freedoms right
can't,
now.
They can't rescind it then. I mean, they can't bring legislation rescind it.
Yes, there is. Senator Representative Kolkhorst has proposed legislation, a bill that is to stop the Trans-Texas Corridor. It got enough votes in the House, and they have a two-year moratorium on comprehensive development agreements. Those are the agreements that allow that Trans-Texas Corridor to be agreed to. Two-year moratorium. But that took the regular citizens of that state to wake up and protest what was happening, because their legislators were not paying attention. And they had to have thousands of people and network. They had unlikely people partnering with each other. You've got union and non-union people working together to try to stop that, because this is about national sovereignty, and the state of Texas recognizes
that.
What
about national security? We're so concerned since the attacks on 9/11. Securing our borders, this looks like it's opening the borders even more than they're open now.
Well, they're using that as saying, no, we need to have border security, smart technology at the border. They never say they're going to shut it down. So when you and I say we need to secure the border, in our minds, we're talking about stopping the influx of illegal aliens,
right,
or Mexican trucks that aren't up to speed, etc. When they are talking about securing the border, they're talking about building more border crossings and making sure that everybody has a real ID, and that we use global tracking to keep track of the goods as they're coming in. Nowhere in there is about stopping it, because the trade's got to continue.
Right, right.
So we have to define the terms when we're talking about this. When you're talking to somebody who's in the government, when we say secure the border, we need to say, What do you mean by secure the border?
You know, what really bothers me is that, you know, we occupy Iraq. There's not a war there. We're in an occupation mode, in my opinion. We occupy Iraq because Iraq has something we need, which is oil. You know, and I always thought to myself, if we were going to do something so stupid as to invade another country and occupy it, we should have done that to Mexico.
Well, right?
Because here's a country that has no rule of law whatsoever. And to have an operating agreement with a country with no rule of law is suicide. It's constitutional suicide, actually.
It's very expensive also.
Yeah.
Because they'll have to be brought up to, as a globalist say, that there's disparities. There's inequalities.
Oh, yeah, tremendous disparity.
Disparities.
Now, what do our listeners need to do in order to become more informed of this subject and maybe become active rather than proactive?
What I would recommend that they do is, number one, stop using your computers for looking up recipes or how to make make something, you know, don't use it for trivial things. It is a research tool. It is there. Moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas, whoever you are, you can use your computer and the good old telephone. Start networking with people. Get to know who your legislator is. I have some recommended websites. May I read those?
Yes, but let me correct myself. I said let's be active rather than proactive. I meant let's be active rather than reactive. So I have to, because someone's going to call in or write me a letter and say, you know what you just said? And I said, oh, I just corrected myself. Bing!
That's
okay,
all right.
I'm awfully sorry.
That's all right. It's easy to misspeak. All right, I'm going to recommend some websites.
Okay, carefully, everyone. Get your pens and papers out and write this stuff down or memorize it.
Okay, these are good all over the world. They're websites. On the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, that's a government website. That's the agreement that Bush...
2 minutes.
Okay, we've got www.spp.gov. So that's Security and Prosperity Partnership, spp.gov. You can also go to a government website. The State Department is www.usinfo.state.gov. For the documents, the Freedom of Information documents on what's happening, you can go to judicialwatch.org. That's www.judicialwatch.org. And then one of my favorite websites is the August Review, and that one is research that goes back 30 years on the issue of globalization, and that is www.augustreview.com.
Okay.
If you want to find out about the Trans-Texas Corridor, you can go to corridorwatch.com. That's the activist group in the state of Texas that's fighting the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Right. Are there any groups, I mean, other than multinational corporations, who are supporting this?
I would say the investment bankers are in supporting it.
Other than the investment bankers, you know, because they financed Hitler, too. So we put them all in the same boat. But is there any other than those guys?
I would have to say certain Republican leadership is. Because it's about economic development, quote-unquote economic development, and some Democrats also.
Okay, so there are some people in the House. But what about the citizens? Are there any groups such as yours that are taking the other side?
Yes, Corridor Watch is one of them that's actively opposing it. You can go to stopspp.org.
No, I mean for it. I mean, I'm saying...
Oh, for it?
Yeah, proponents. I'm saying groups like yours that are actively campaigning for it that are not... you know, tied in politically or financially to anyone?
No, because it is still kind of under the radar for so many organizations.
Okay.
There's one other thing I wanted to tell you that. We have a senator in Oklahoma that has proposed legislation. It's a resolution. It's Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10, which is urging the withdrawal of the United States from the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And he joins 16 other states in the United States that are urging the withdrawal from the Security and Prosperity Partnership.
Okay. Amanda, we are out of time. This is absolutely fascinating. I can listen to you all night long, but we're out of time. We only have about a minute left on our program. And I want to thank you so much for giving up your Sunday evening to inform us of what is going on. I'm sure this is going to have a tremendous effect because of all the information that you gave us. And I'm sure we were just very unfamiliar with most of it. So thank you for educating us. And thank you so much for being our guest this evening.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay, and where are we now? This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well. Stay tuned. She takes him from her.